Somebody last week mentioned that they would have liked it if on the phone call they knew who else was on the call. And of course we do always at least give our names at the beginning. But I was thinking maybe what we could do is this one time only, whoever happens to be on the call today, of course it's not everybody who joins in, but if you could just say a sentence about what brings you here so that when people listen to this phone call, you know, they'll have a sense of the group as a whole, and hopefully that'll create a little more sense of shared inquiry. So, who would like to start?
I could.
Okay.
This is Michael, and I guess I've been studying TSK haphazardly for 20 years, but perhaps the main reason of joining online classes, I need something that's great that you offer this, Jack. So it gives me some focus.
Great.
Something to pay attention, help encourage me to pay attention.
Okay, someone else?
Diana in San Francisco, and I just stumbled upon TSA this very year and started reading it about 6 months ago. But geez, I'd really like someone to help me figure this stuff out.
Okay.
But, like all of you.
Great.
It's Robert here. Isolated up here in Harrison Hot Springs. This vehicle is the perfect way to stay focused on it and practice moving forward.
Okay.
This is Bridget. I was always, from the first unit, attracted to the TSK books, but I didn't dare to open them. I knew it was not the time, and so about 6 years later, when Jack encouraged me to take part, then I just thought, now I tried, might be the time, and I think it was right. And I'm very happy to have found this entrance or this access to the TSK field.
I'm Hayward Fox, Tucson, Arizona. I've been reading in TSK daily since 1980. I just became obsessed with it. Do the practices, read the material, and was interested in interacting with other people. Embodying the vision more fully and being able to convey it.
Okay, great. Whoever just joined us, we're introducing ourselves a little more fully than we usually do. So who's left?
This is Bruce in San Francisco Bay Area, and I think I first discovered TSK back in the 80s, but I wasn't quite ready for it yet. Then back in the 90s, I picked it up again and really just resonated with it. It just sang in my heart, and probably for the past 5 years I've been reading and practicing periodically, and just joined this class because I thought working with others, talking with others would help this inquiry go deeper. And I also, because it's a passion, like to connect with others around this beautiful vision.
Good. Anybody else?
David in Vancouver.
David?
Hi, David. Robert introduced me to it. And I just find this just an interesting study. It helps me to kind of keep my head in a higher consciousness out of my day-to-day mainstream life, you know.
Okay, great.
This is Tracy. I'm in Berkeley. Intermittently for a number of years.
I was trying
to get more deeply into it.
Okay. Anyone else?
Hello, Mark. Hello? Hello? I'm Marcia from Brazil.
Oh, good. I'm glad you could join us.
Yes, I'm trying. I'm talking from São Paulo, and I've been in touch with Vision since more or less 92, 93, and I see this Vision really brought me a sense of freedom and liberation from older views and patterns, etc. And I'm trying to explore it more and more. And I think that's it.
Great.
This is Christine from Iowa, which just snowed a whole bunch more. And I resonate with many things that people have said. And I've been, I guess, having a relationship with TSK since Rinpoche taught it the first time, and I was privileged enough to be there. So it's neat to be with everybody.
Good.
This is Parker. I'm in Des Moines with Christine. Christine, Ken, and I have studied TSK together some when the, starting when the Twin Brains book came out, and we find that studying in this online situation by phone is helpful.
Okay, great. Anyone else?
Hello, this is Karen from Germany. The connection is very bad. I hardly can understand anything. Karen, I appreciate very much take part in a group. Also, it's a little bit difficult because of connection and understanding and the language. I've done a lot of kumis the last years and dharma retreats, and now I appreciate that the TSK is practical to do it in daily life every moment.
Good. Anybody else? Kathleen?
Kathleen, and I just recently started partaking in TSK.
Okay. Again, let me apologize for the poor quality of my voice, because I'm doing it over my cell phone, and that unfortunately means that your voices won't record that well. But as to the problem, it seems like in Europe we have some trouble with quality. So I don't know, Kathleen, maybe there's a way to look into that, or anyway, we'll have to take time right now, but let's see if we can figure something out to try to make it a little better. Okay, so I wanted to take those few minutes because, as I said, some of the feedback we've gotten is that it would just be nice for people to have more of a sense of the group as a whole and really participating in something together. And several of you mentioned that in your in what you had to say. So I appreciate your sharing with us what's going on for you. And I think you see we have a range of people. I hope everybody's finding it valuable and keeps participating. So let's talk about the reading for this week. This is the reading for week two. And I thought it might be useful to just go back one more time to ask this kind of basic question. We're talking about space. I mean, actually, we're talking about thoughts. You know, that's the program that we're in, thoughts and stories and self. But it's in the section of the Dynamics book about space. And just as a kind of reminder to ourselves how those things are connected, the link is actually quite straightforward. Thoughts establish substance. That's what the theme is in this chapter, you could say. Our sense that things are substantial is really grounded in the fact that we think about them. And that's what gives them their substance. And when things are substantial in the way thoughts claim that they're substantial, substance takes over from space. It kind of squeezes out all the space. And all we're left with is all this stuff, all these things, all these substances. And, of course, not just physical substances, but our whole life takes on a kind of claim to being real and solid and therefore fixed and impossible to change and all of those things. And so when we investigate thoughts, we're looking at how we can open up more space or recover space. And in doing that, and you could say in freeing ourselves from the claims of substance, we really do discover a different way of being. So that's the basic approach. I think part of the reason that that's a little difficult for people to tune into is that we're used to thinking that thoughts are less real than anything else. So, for instance, if you go into a restaurant and you look at the menu and you want to order a piece of pie, maybe there's a description of the pie on the menu, or if you go into certain kinds of American restaurants anyway, they may have a picture of the pie on the menu. So that's like the thought of the pie. And you have that thought, and then you decide to order the pie. And then you eat the pie, and eating the pie is much more real than just the picture of the pie. You know, it engages you much more fully, it's more substantial. So the natural tendency is to say that thoughts in themselves are less substantial than whatever it is that constitutes their content. But the reason I thought that was an interesting example was the picture of the pie on the menu. Is how does that actually work? You know, you go into a restaurant, maybe you don't know exactly what you want to have, and then here's this picture of a piece of pie, and it does, let's say, stimulate in you the thought of a piece of pie. And what happens is that a reality gets created by that, and at the heart of that reality is this thought, you know, oh, I think I want to have pie. And there's a little bit of imagining what the pie is going to taste like. And, of course, the restaurant does its best to make the picture of the pie look really nice and inviting and stimulate some desire. So the thought of having the pie creates the reality of your ordering the pie. And then later on, when you're actually eating the pie, if you're focused on it, well, that's a little bit different level. But it's still, you know, the whole time you're eating the pie, you're really saying to yourself, this is what I'm doing. Of course, you don't say it in words, but you're saying, okay, I'm eating a piece of pie, you know, eating a piece of pie. And then, in fact, what happens in reality is, for a moment, we focus on the taste of the pie, and then we're kind of thinking about what we're doing. We're eating the pie, and then maybe in the next moment, we talk to the person we're sitting with, and we hardly even notice the pie at all. And that's a different thought. And we keep switching around from thoughts to thoughts, bouncing around from one to another. As the reading says, we enter these bubble worlds. And I think the idea of a bubble world that Rinpoche uses here is meant to suggest that each thought is self-contained, like a bubble. You know, so one bubble comes up, and then another bubble comes up. And each one is complete by itself. But what goes on inside that bubble, in an important sense, it's not the only way to look at it, but in an important sense, what goes on inside that bubble owes its being, owes its happening entirely to the bubble. And the thought is the bubble. And I guess the way to see that is that if, in fact, you are eating that piece of pie and you get involved in a conversation, you may continue to eat the pie and not even notice what you're doing, even though you thought that's what you were concerned about, you know, even though you ordered the pie because you expected you'd be enjoying every moment of it, in theory. What happens is that the pie stops existing, right? The pie is not there because... yes, there's, you know, somebody looking from the outside sees you putting forkfuls of pie into your mouth, but for you, there's no experience that is a pie experience. It's not there. It's not real. And that really is the result of the thought. So I thought we could look into that by doing an exercise that I think we did last quarter, but it's always an interesting exercise, and it lends itself to doing it for just a couple of minutes. It has to do with the way that thought communicates the reality of what's real. So if there's a pie in front of you and you're about to eat it, you say, well, that pie is real, whereas the picture of the pie is not real except as a picture. So the question is, what does the realness of the pie consist of? And the exercise, which Rinpoche introduces using the example, I think, of a light switch. But the exercise is to pick out something around you right now, something, if you're in a room somewhere, pick out something in the room and let yourself be aware of it and be aware of its reality, its realness as a thing. And then close your eyes and visualize the same thing and let yourself be aware of the reality of that thing as you visualize it. And the idea here is to go back and forth a few times and try to get a sense of what is the quality that makes one of those real and the other one not. And is that quality itself a part of the thought of what the thing is. Is that clear? Any questions? Okay, well, let's take a couple of minutes then to do that. Just pick out an object, go back and forth, eyes open, eyes closed, and try to get a sense of the realness of the thing. Okay, well let's stop there. Does anybody have anything they'd like to say about doing that exercise?
Tracy, I think the main thing that real for me is that I'm engaging other senses.
Mm-hmm.
Feel and sight, and I can feel the item, its tape measures, and all of its little ridges and screws and things, and I can see its color and the words don't have to tell me what it is. So it's engaging other senses that makes it.
grasp in my imagination. I can't feel it or see it.
Yeah. Okay, well, that makes sense. I think there's a kind of a subtle distinction here. You can list the things that make the thing real, like engaging the other senses, and that is, I think, a natural way to make the distinction. But in part, what I'm trying to get at here is the just the feeling of it being real, and that's a little different. You know, you can say, okay, here are the reasons why it feels real. But just the feeling of it being real, whereas when you close your eyes, there's the feeling of it not being real, of it being a visualization. Go ahead.
Sorry. For me, there's two things that come up around that. One is just the visualization for me is much less vivid. It's more wobbly, and it doesn't stay as constantly there, and it feels like I'm kind of efforting to sustain it, but I feel much more my participation in its being there than when I open my eyes. It feels like I almost relax, and I don't have to make any effort for it to be there.
Okay, that's interesting. In the case of the visualization, you participate in it more, and yet that makes it seem less real. Which I guess is another way of saying that part of what makes something real for us, in terms of thinking about it, really, is that it's independent of us, right? It would still be there if we left the room, kind of like that sense. Okay.
Hi, Jack. This is Robert. I was going to add to that. When I'm looking at something, that there's just this overwhelming certainty in the field. And it seems to have to do with the fact that it's effortless, that I'm not participating in it other than observation. When I'm trying to imagine it, I'm creating something. That creation, that trying to create, seems to make it less real for me.
Okay.
And maybe following up again, it's like the sense of where it comes from. If I think it's, when I'm visualizing it, it feels like it's inside me and I'm kind of inadequately trying to construct something. When I look outside, it's like, there's a lineage that I feel, why I attribute to it, that it's part of something larger, that it doesn't require my effort or my attention to create.
Right. And there's, I'm looking at my cell phone, or I was looking at my cell phone, and so, I know that somebody manufactured it somewhere and shipped it here, and, I went to the store and bought it, and then I unpacked it, and there's that whole lineage, right? And it's all... it's somehow it extends beyond me, and that's part of what's involved in substance. Okay, well, the sense I think it's important to convey here is, I mean, all those things are true, and nobody would argue that the thing you visualize is on the same level of reality, let's say, as the thing that you actually see in front of you, and you know it has this history, and it has these other sensory dimensions, and it's independent. All of those things are part of what makes it real. Nonetheless, all of those things that are part of what make it real are a way of thinking about it, or are a thought. And I'm not sure that that's, if that doesn't make sense to you, just kind of reflect on it on your own at some point. But what I'm trying to get at is that the guarantee of substance, the guarantee of reality, is itself a thought which has to do with how real things are supposed to be. There's a thought about the nature of reality. And in a sense, you could come up with all these different tests for how you know whether something is real or not real. Can you touch it, for instance? But all of those tests kind of refer back to this more fundamental thought, which says this is what it means for something to be real, and something meets that criterion. So the realness of something is still at the level of thought. That's the way of thinking about it that hopefully is fruitful for us as we go along. So one of the ways that comes up is and this gets discussed in the chapter, and it was also discussed in the posts that people had on the web this week. But one of the ways that comes up is that on the one hand, you can say there are thoughts, and then on the other hand, there is something more substantial that we can experience, and the feeling tone of it is very different. So, David back in, where is he, in Philadelphia or New Jersey? Anyway, he's not here.
Philadelphia,
thanks. He had a nice post on the website where he talked about the fact that he was having all these anxious thoughts because he's had to re-enter the job market and he's trying to get a job, so he's feeling anxious about that. And then he was able to kind of let go of those thoughts and tune in to the situation that he was in, the snow outside, the cornfield outside his window, things like that. And there was a really fundamental difference between those two, and being able to let go of the anxious thoughts had led to a quality of feeling more open, more spacious, more free. I think everybody knows what that refers to. He describes it very nicely. And there is clearly a difference between those two ways of being. But one of the things that the reading makes clear, or tries to point out anyway, is that that experience of being in tune with your senses, being in tune with the world around you, is still a thought. It's still a construct. It's still something that is fabricated, you could say, by the mind or by awareness. It doesn't mean that the difference doesn't matter. It does. But, oh dear.
Pay attention to the sense that signals important things. That's worse than being lost in thought somehow.
Sorry, I my call was dropped, but I'm back. Go ahead. I only heard part of that last comment, but whoops.
Are you back, Kat? I'm not sure. What's worse than being lost in thought?
Neglect, you know, like, unless you think, we believe in the reality of other people, we're not going to feel compassion, or unless we're aware of the conditions that other people are living in, we're not going to be caring people. Like thought brings us, is a vehicle for awareness and interaction with people. Like at the same time as thought being making us see substance what it isn't and all the problems that follow that, it delivers our respect somehow as being our primary vehicle for awareness.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I am back, but you guys go on with your conversation. That's fine.
so that it would be like thought can be an ally. It can connect us. It depends on the content or the focus.
a mistaken interpretation.
So you broke up on that from that last sentence. Can you just say the last couple of sentences again?
Oh, me?
Yeah, please.
Oh, just I think thought is our way of maintaining substance, like breathing is our way of maintaining our life. I guess it's kind of a paraphrase or something in the readings as we and we need to think like we need to breathe, even if like it's the conclusion of substance that's wrong, not thinking. Like that kind of idea.
Let me step in. I think that's really valuable what you guys were talking about. One way to think about it is that there's three levels, or maybe four, or you know, you could divide it up different ways. But you know, they're the thoughts that we ordinarily have, and an awful lot of those thoughts really take us away from the heart of our experience and just get us caught up in our emotions. And then there are the thoughts that put us back in touch with our experience. And then there are the thoughts that we really can cultivate, as Michael was suggesting, that it can open up possibilities that might have been closed before. You know, sometimes thoughts really invite us to see things in a new way. So that's three levels. But then there's this really, really important fourth level. And that's the one I think that goes to the heart of what's being said in this chapter. And that is the understanding how it is that thoughts operate, and understanding that the claims that they make are not solid and are not the last word. Because when you understand that, and there's this lovely phrase in the reading that describes thoughts as the transitional constructions of multidimensional experience. It's a wonderful phrase, although, you know, you have to say it to yourself a few times. But when you see that thoughts are transitional, when you see that they're constructions, when you see that there's something more multidimensional underlying them, then at the very least, you have the opportunity to reshape and reconfigure the way you're thinking about reality. And when you do that, you can frame it in ways, you can shape it in ways that are more positive, more nourishing, more healing, as you were saying, Michael, more open to other people. All of those possibilities are there because what you thought was real is not. And I guess that's literally what I'm saying. You thought something was real, but that something is not real. It's a thought construction. It's a transitional construction. And I think that's really what the TSK vision is offering us here is you know, not just that we're going to start thinking things differently, that we're going to have a different view of reality, but that we're going to understand how views of reality get put together so that we really are entering into a completely different realm of freedom. Sound good?
sounds
nice. Sorry. okay. So there's this very nice suggestion for how you might do that. It's on page 57. It's a nice suggestion, but I think it is very hard to know how to really do it. He says thoughts can become the symbols of their own arising. And when I was reading that and thinking about it, I thought, well, that's a really good practice, but we have to give it a little more, I have to make it a little more accessible. At least I don't exactly know how I would practice that way. But I do think that you could practice in terms of taking the content of a thought. So, you know, the kind of typical thought that says, here I am, this is what's going on. this is, you know, here's this person I'm relating to or this situation I'm relating to. Whatever the content of the thought is, to see that as a kind of symbol of its own arising, or maybe we don't have to say it in quite those fancy words, to see whatever arises as a construct, as a transitional construct. And the word transitional there, I think, is just a helpful reminder. Jeez. The word transitional is just a helpful reminder that it's not very solid. It's a construct, and it's just in the process of moving on to the next construct. It's a bubble, and in the next moment, there's going to be another bubble. So I'm going into that because that's where I think we could be practicing in the next week. Just when it occurs to you, when you feel like you'd like to explore it in the middle of your activity or setting aside some time, just look at what arises.
Transitional. Transitional means like fleeting or impermanent. Is that what
Yeah, I think so. Fleeting or impermanent, or always in transit. In the sense that in the next moment it's going to be something else. So yeah, fleeting, impermanent, but that in transit. I like that idea. If you're interested, there's in Visions of Knowledge, which you have access to if you have the CD. Rinpoche has a really interesting discussion of the word trance, T-R-A-N-S. So that would be a place to look to get a sense of transitional. Anyway, that's what I think could be the practice for next week, is find times to explore the constructed, the transitional nature of whatever it is you're dealing with. And to give it a little bit of juice, let's say, I think a good time to do that is if you find yourself in any kind of a negative situation, if you're feeling frustrated or anxious or tense, or those are the examples that come to mind for some reason, if you're feeling any of those things, or angry, or you know, anything like that, that's a great time to do that practice, because you're very committed to something that you actually don't want to be committed to at all. You're very committed to a negative thought, a negative construction. And that would be a good time to look and see, can you bring in a little of that quality of it being a transitional construct, or to use that other fancier language, being the symbol of its own arising. That's the practice. So, I think that'll do. I'm sorry I got lost in the middle there. I guess that shows that the phone call too is a transitional construction, right? Okay. So I'll post something as a kind of an introduction to the next week's readings. Next week we start talking about stories. So I'm going to be looking at the relationship between thoughts and stories. Okay.
Thank you.